Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammāsambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. I haven't had time to practice this, so I'll be reading it straight off without practice. These are a couple of three small pieces. I'll just read them as if they're one piece because they're very similar. This one's called Don't Get Drunk on Tranquility. Many people do. When I was younger, I looked for peace in the wrong way. I'd sit to practice samadhi and my mind wouldn't settle down. It ran around wildly, and no matter how I tried to bring it back, it wouldn't return. If it did come back, it wouldn't stay. What to do? Should I stop breathing? I used to try that. I'd hold my breath to try and force the mind to stop moving, but it would still go. I'd hold the breath longer, but the only thing that could come of holding my breath longer and longer was that I would eventually die. It was similar when I felt my meditation was disturbed by sounds. I filled my ears with wax. I really stuffed them tight so that I couldn't hear anything. It seemed like a good thing. No more outside sounds to bother me. But I started thinking about it. If not hearing or seeing anything is the path of the awakened, then the deaf should all be enlightened. The blind should be enlightened. The completely deaf should be arahant. So I contemplated this until I got some understanding. I realized that just trying to block things out didn't really protect me. So I stopped doing that. I realized it was only me and my attachments causing the problems. So now I have a lot of regret. When I think about the way I practiced when I was new to meditation, how deluded I was, I felt really bad. I wanted to practice to be free of suffering, but I was only bringing suffering upon myself, and the result was that there was never any peace for me. When the mind becomes tranquil, we are delighted. If we have a few days of peace from it, we feel it's really enjoyable. Then one day, all of a sudden, it's like sitting on a nest of biting ants. You can't sit. We can't do anything. The mind is so wild and agitated. So we ponder and try to figure out why it isn't like before. It was so peaceful for those few days, and we can't help but long for that experience to return. Right here we are deluded. Conditions of mind change. They are not fixed, certain or stable. That is their nature. That is always going to be the way they are. Whatever occurs is already something old. It is not anything different or unique, but is ruled by these same characteristics. We have to keep looking at the mind's reaction, the way it likes some things and dislikes others. When we have liking, we feel pleased, and the sense of being pleased only comes out because of delusion. It's not because we are in the right. If you are tranquil, don't get drunk on it. If you are distracted, don't get drunk. The Buddha taught not to be intoxicated. This applies to all experience without exception. If we are always wanting more and more, then we are always in a condition of disturbance. The Buddha thus said that there is no wisdom in error. The Buddha once said that there is no wisdom in more samadhi, tranquility meditation. In the samatha practice, first we may be tranquil because we are separated from external sense objects. Not hearing sounds, not experiencing the objects of the other senses. We can become peaceful. That's good in its own way. It's because we've escaped from things for a while. It's like a certain illness, such as cancer. It may not be noticeable for some time. There are no symptoms, such as pain or swelling. So the person feels okay, as long as the disease hasn't manifested. That's being in samadhi and not noticing anything, feeling one has no defilements. But when we leave that tranquil environment and start encountering sights and sounds, we may be disturbed by those things. So then, what can you do? Where can you stay in this world? Where can you go that you won't see, hear, smell, taste, or have physical contact with anything? The Buddha wanted our eyes to see things, our ears to hear things, our noses to know smells, our tongues to experience tastes, our bodies to feel hard and soft, cold and heat. He wanted us to have this full range of experience, not to live in total isolation. He wanted us to experience these things and realize, aha, this is the way things are. This is how we can come to wisdom. Even if we aren't doing sitting and walking meditation all the time, the mind can still be aware and on track, practicing energetically without there being any loss or deterioration. One who is skillful practices Dharma in this way. Have you seen the old meditation masters? They're indifferent to things. We can't really understand their equanimity. It's because their minds are cool and they have knowledge. Whenever suffering tries to approach, it doesn't shake them. When happiness comes, it doesn't shake them. Don't bother me, little child. That's how they view these things. When unhappiness comes, don't bother me, little child. They are adults. The defilements can only sit around helplessly. We look at them and wonder how they can be like that. Our own minds heat up over such things. So it's taught that we should find an accomplished spiritual teacher and take his or her example as a foundation, contemplating it over a long period of time. Little by little, we can work at meditation. We don't have deep knowledge yet. We don't really know what we're doing, but we can progress a little at a time. We may not know that we benefit from it, but we do, little by little. When you eat your food, are you full after the first mouthful? You won't feel that way, but you could say you're full, though not very full. Take the second mouthful, and you're more full, but it's still just a little. If you keep on eating a little at a time, you will get there. Think about it, look ahead, and you will see where you are going. Finally, you will be slowly chewing your last mouthful. Small things accumulate and hunger is reduced until finally you will be full. Maybe to the point where you can't look at any more food. The mouthfuls you have eaten, one at a time, have filled you. Old folks here will tell you there's fire in dry bamboo. In the past, matches were hard to come by and didn't always work. When people went into the forest, they could just find some dry wood, and they knew there was fire in it. Whenever they wanted to cook, they only had to rub two pieces of dry bamboo together to start a fire. They could just keep rubbing them together. At first, the wood was cold. Rubbing for a while, it got hot, and then after some time, there was smoke. But it did take a while to get hot, and even more time to make smoke and finally fire. Now we, their children and descendants in these times, don't have much patience. If we try to rub pieces of bamboo to make a fire, within 2 minutes we're getting restless. We get fed up, put the sticks down, time to take a break. Then when we pick them up again, we find they're cold. We start rubbing once more, but we're starting from the beginning again, so they don't get hot very quickly. And again, we get impatient. Like this, we could keep it up for an hour or a whole day and wouldn't see any fire. We rub and stop, rub and stop. Then we start to criticize the old people. Those old timers are crazy. I don't know what they're talking about. They must be lying. I've been rubbing these sticks all this time and still there's nothing. This is what happens if our understanding and commitment to practice doesn't go far enough. There's not enough heat, but we expect to have fire. The old folks have done that, but they know it takes some effort. You have to keep rubbing without taking a break. If you take a break, you only get cold sticks. It's like the students who travel here to study meditation. They listen to some teaching and they want to get it fast. They want to find the method of meditation that will give them results fastest of all. I tell them, if you want fastest, it won't work. There's such a thing as cause and result. The results will be born of the appropriate causes. It doesn't simply appear in an instant as we desire. Fastest, even the Buddha would be stumped. We will progress on the path because of the continuous effort, just like someone rubbing pieces of bamboo to get fire. Rubbing without stopping, the heat increases. The more she rubs, the hottest it gets. When smoke appears, fire is near. But at the point when she gets smoke, she doesn't take a break. It's not a game. So she knows she has to keep at it. In that way, she gets fire. This one's called Some Final Advice. When the mind is untrained, we tend to believe only in our own likes and dislikes. What we like is good, and what we dislike is bad. We may even decide that harmful things are good, and it's true, but only for our own unreliable, changeable minds. It has nothing to do with Dhamma, and it is not true in the light of reality. So it's taught that we should pull the mind towards the Dhamma, to enter the Dhamma. Don't try to pull the mind. Don't try to pull the Dhamma towards the mind. Just as in the custom of society, a lesser, ordinary person will go to seek out an important person. The important person doesn't seek out the unimportant person. If we want to accomplish the Buddha's way, we should be willing to seek out the Buddha and his teachings and submit to them. We don't expect the Buddha to come and submit to his students. This is a time-honored way. Just because we like something, will you decide that it is good and right? It's good only because of your habits. That's the confused view of an untrained mind. So before the mind is well trained, we have to push it towards the Dhamma and gradually make it accord with Dhamma. Eventually, the mind is Dhamma and Dhamma is the mind. Then all activities are Dhamma. Thinking is Dhamma. Everything we do is Dhamma. It is truth. Once a tortoise and a snake lived in a forest. The forest was on fire and they were trying to flee. The tortoise was lumbering along and then he saw the snake slither by. It felt pity for the snake. Why? The snake has no legs. So the tortoise figured it couldn't be able to escape the fire. It wanted to help the snake. But as the fire kept spreading, the snake fled easily while the tortoise couldn't make it, even with four legs, and it died there. This was the tortoise's ignorance. It thought, if you have legs, you can move. If you don't have legs, you can't go anywhere. So it was worried about the snake. It thought the snake would die because it didn't have legs. But the snake was cool about it. It wasn't worried because it could easily escape the danger. This is one way to talk to people with confused ideas. They will feel pity for you and consider your ignorant and consider you ignorant if you aren't like them and don't have their views and their knowledge. But who is really ignorant? People may look at you and feel that your way of life, your interest in Dhamma, makes no sense. Others may say that if you want to practice Dhamma, you ought to ordain. Ordaining or not ordaining isn't the crucial point. It's how you practice. People live in the realm of sensuality. Lay people live in the realm of sensuality. They have families, money and possessions, and are deeply involved in all sorts of activities. Yet sometimes they will gain insight and see Dhamma before monks and nuns do. Why is this? It's just because of their suffering from all of these things. They see the fault and can let go. They put it down after seeing clearly in their experience, seeing the harm and letting go. They are then able to make good use of their positions in the world and benefit others. We ordained people, on the other hand, might sit here daydreaming about lay life, thinking how great it would be. Oh yeah, I'd work my fields, make money, and then I could have a nice family and a comfortable home. We didn't know what it's really like. The lay people are out there doing it, breaking their backs in the fields, struggling to earn some money and survive. But for us, it's only a fantasy. Lay people live in a certain kind of thoroughness and clarity. Whatever they do, they really do it. Even getting drunk, they do it thoroughly and have the experience of what it actually is, while we can only imagine what it's like. So because of their experience, they may become tired of things and realize the Dhamma quicker than monks can. One should be one's own witness. Don't take others as your witness. It means learning to trust yourself. People may think you're crazy, but never mind. It only means that they don't know anything about Dhamma. But if you lack confidence and instead rely on the opinion of unenlightened people, you can easily be deterred. In Thailand these days, it's hard for young people to sustain an interest in Dhamma. Maybe they come to the monastery a few times, and then their friends start calling them, "Hey, Dhamma, Dhammo." They start changing their ways, no longer seeing value in seeking fun, and their friends complain, "Since you started going to the monastery, you don't want to hang out or go drinking anymore. What's wrong with you?" So they often give up the path. Others' words can't measure your practice, and you don't realize the Dhamma because of what others say. I mean the real Dhamma, the teachings others can give you to show you the path, but that isn't real knowledge. When people genuinely meet the Dhamma, they realize it directly within themselves. So the Buddha said that he is merely the one who shows the way. In teaching us, he is not accomplishing the way for us. It's not so easy as that. It's like someone who sells us a plow to till the fields. He isn't going to do the plowing for us. We have to do that ourselves. Don't wait for the salesman to do it. Once he's made the sale, he takes the money and goes. That's his part. That's how it is in practice. The Buddha shows the way. He's not the one who does it for us. Don't expect that salesman to till your field. If you understand the path in this way, it's a little bit more comfortable for us. And we will do it ourselves. Then there will be fruition.